This episode is sponsored by Our Crowd, where you can invest in pre-vetted startups and exclusive venture funds. Build a diversified portfolio alongside trusted VC funds and angel investors. To find out more information, go to ourcrowd.com/TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Fed is more hawkish until markets get squirmy, of course. Reverse repo madness, record rate on Thursday, flattening yield curve. What does that mean anyway? And our guest today, Steve Sanders, Executive VP at Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 719 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to the new world. The new federal holiday announced and approved. We got Juneteenth, which is now a new federal holiday. It's going to be, I think, our 12th of the year. So during the summertime now, we're going to have a lot more going on in terms of the ability to take off, it seems. And summer is here. Yep. So we have the virus somewhat under control. We have markets not so happy right now, but well, maybe parts of the market, at least. Hey, as a way of introduction, I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm also the co-host of DH Unplugged, where John C. Dvorak and myself get together each and every Tuesday night, and we talk about, we talk about some funny things. We talk about some strange things. We talk about the lighter side of finance, but we also dig down and dig deep into some of the idiot type of nonsense that goes on in the financial markets to uncover what's really going on. I mean, really what's happening at the core versus what is being told to us is happening. And we do that each week, kind of trying to decipher and provide a better insight into what's happening with the markets, particularly on some of those more obscure areas that are not often focused on. So that's kind of what we do, but we try to do it in a way that's uplifting, light, and also do things that have a lot of audience participation. For example, we have a game that we play each week, which is getting approximately each week. We every so often we skip it, but we have a stock picking game we do. But basically, we pick a stock that we think is going to do well, and you see what's going on and track it. We have the old codgers versus the millennials. We have a game called Close to the Pin. So anyway, point is that you need to check out DH Unplugged because we do talk about some fun things on there. So last week we talked about diversification. In fact, it was part of a multi-part series on, kind of a mini-series on the idea of diversification and really understanding more about what is and what is not the area of diversification that we should focus on. We talked about sector allocation. We talked about what is and what isn't diversification. We talked about understanding fixed income, alternative assets, a little bit into the area of hedging. You know, these are things that we do each and every day and that we look at and we try to figure out where do we want to be in the markets? Where do we want our portfolio to be? You know, it's interesting because you can make all of your best assumptions looking at historical analogs, looking at the way things reacted under certain conditions in the past. And at the same time, realize that many of those types of relationships, correlations, are broken. And a big part of the reason is because we no longer really have a totally free market. And that's something really important to understand in the world of investing right now. That may change in the future, but right now we have a lack of true capitalism, market freedom. because it's being supported by the Fed and fiscal policy. And we're all happy about that. Whoa, hey, you know, give us an extra $1 trillion, do another $100 billion worth of monthly bond buying, make sure that we have interest rates low so that borrowing costs are really in control and extremely low, and let's do everything that we can to prop up the economy. And that's good for stocks, it's good for investments, commodities, it's good for everything, speculation, everything is good. But, you know, we have to also step back and recognize that that is not necessarily a freely operating market. And I say that and bring all that to you because of what happened, particularly this week, when the Fed got a little bit more hawkish. Now, they just talked about the fact that, well, you know, we have a situation here where we're a little bit concerned about the potential for inflation. The economy is healing, and as the virus is under control and vaccines are put out more and more, well, we're thinking that the economy may heal a little bit faster than we originally anticipated. Things are going better than we thought. We heard that not only under the breath and tone from Powell, but also on Friday, we heard a couple of speakers that talked about that. And the main one was Friday morning with James Bullard. He talked about how, well, the Fed went hawkish. He used the word hawkish. We heard that they are upping their estimate on inflation from 2.4% throughout the 2021-2022 range to 3.4%. Now they just slipped that in there. 2.4 to 3.4%. That's wait. That's a 30% increase in the expected inflation rate over a period of year and a half. Now, what that tells you is a few things. First, the Fed sucks. The Fed sucks at projecting anything. Well, we all sit here and go, well, the Fed says that they're going to have an unemployment rate of this, and we're going to have a growth rate of that, and the GDP of this, and we're going to have inflation rate of that. We really believe that we're going to provide our clients the best interest by following along their anticipated outlook. The only reason why anyone would actually go ahead and follow along with the Fed's outlook is because you believe that just following along the Fed is a good idea, because they will change and they will maneuver whatever they have to stay on easy policy right now. Their outlook, their projections, and their estimates are crap. Seriously. They're terrible. They've always been terrible. All they do is adjust. They're no better than the weatherman. They're no better than an average economist out there that basically, well, I would say, if you were an advanced amateur or even just a low-level beginner professional economist, you would do the same job as the Fed. If you had the ability to change your mind and to update, revise your outlook on a regular basis, that's what's happening. Now, one of the things that's happened is that with this slight change, which I'm going to get into in a second, what they did, because it's really interesting, there was a big underlying change in markets. We saw this rotation happening. And you could see over the past few months that we had a significant change in leadership from growth to value, from tech to banks, from healthcare to utilities to real estate. And over the past few days, past week, that's all changed. The darlings turned into dirt, and the dirt turned into darlings very quickly, without a tremendous amount of reason why, except for the fact if you want to follow along and you want to peg it on inflation and the effect of what it does to the dollar, and more importantly, what it does to interest rates, okay. In fact, we thought that if there's going to be inflation, this was the going basic narrative that you had to buy into, that, you know what, if we do have inflation, interest rates will go up. And we saw that from the beginning of the year. We saw the interest rates really started moving up. Look at TLT as an example, the long, the 20-plus year long Treasury ETF, and you'll see that the price went up dramatically, meaning rates, or I should say that price came down dramatically, rates went up. Price came down, rates went up. Everybody was of the mindset that there was going to be a significant amount of inflation, thereby bringing on higher rates. Well, what happened here is, in fact, with the Fed coming out with their commentary, there was a yield curve flattening. Yield curve flattening. What that means is if we look for the left part of the lowest range, of the 1 month, the 5 month, 6 month, whatever period you want to take, 1 year, 2 year, was much lower in yield than the 20-year and 30-year. And so you get a curve on a chart from left to right, top to bottom, that was from lower left to top right. That was a normalized curve. It's very good for the economy. When you start getting a flattening yield curve going into what's called an inverted yield curve, which we had a couple of years ago and people were freaking out about, if you remember, what that does is it starts to show you that there is tightening in the economy. Whether or not the Fed is doing it, or the general nature of what's happening with bonds and yields, the bottom line is money is not as freely available. And as such, it is considered a tightening. And yes, the Fed did acknowledge a lot of things. And yes, the Fed did kind of hint to a degree that there's going to be the potential for maybe, possibly, sometime in the future, we'll see what happens, maybe a slowdown in bond buying. And they did, in fact, clearly indicate that their economic outlook was, in fact, better. But really what they did was, and the main issue was, to do a technical adjustment. Now, the Fed raised the interest rates it pays on bank reserves, or the IOER, which is the banks it pay, the rate it pays on bank reserves, which is held by U.S. central banks, to Let me start again. They raised it to 0.15% and also lifted the rate it pays on overnight reverse repo arrangements to 0.05%, which is a tool used to set a floor on short-term interest rates. Effectively, what happened here is it basically pulled some liquidity out of the markets. It pulled liquidity out of the markets. And it wasn't necessarily meant to do so in a very rapid pace. However, it did do that. In fact, we saw one of the largest moves on reverse repos and tremendous amount of offering back to the Fed with this increase in the interest rate it pays on bank reserves. A lot of banks put their money with the Fed. Billions, 50, I think it was close to $700 billion. So it moves outside of the banks and back to the Fed. And just that little small move cratered materials, financials, commodities were hit. The dollar moved higher on these comments, on this little technical adjustment. Plus, commodities were already under pressure with the newest revelation from China that they were trying to rein in prices, right? So this combined, the two of these, was really a 1-2 punch for commodities. Now, here's my takeaway of this whole thing. What do I think about this, right? You know, what does this mean for the future? Well, we saw on Friday also that bond yields on the long end bond really started coming down again. That just squashed the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is full of industrials and financials, et cetera. The banks really got hit on the kisser. And that really took down the entire risk asset environment. As opposed to Thursday, a little bit different. Thursday, the Dow came down about 200 points. It was kind of sniffing around what was going on, but then realized, hey, wait a minute, maybe this is good for the technology companies and some of these big major names in the NASDAQ that now have a lower yield on the long bond that may actually go issue bonds for the purpose of bringing in money and doing buybacks. I think that's kind of what the framework was going on there. So my takeaway from all this is this little nudge, this little wink towards, yeah, we see there's a problem in the future, is creating problems in some area of the markets that, well, maybe, yeah, was too frothy. Maybe they were due for a pullback, but we're really not even talking about a move that I would call significant. In fact, I don't even think I would call this a move that was necessarily tightening. While it did have the impact of a slight level of tightening, don't forget, banks can move money off their balance sheets onto the Feds back and forth. They're making a little bit of money on it. That's good for them. It does take out money that they would necessarily lend to the street. The big problem here, I think what's going on right now, is that the Fed has painted themselves into a corner. And they really can't get out of this one without causing some major market damage. And that's understandable. If you think about what they did was create a major move in risk assets, right? And risk appetite, animal spirits, and speculative nature of opportunities in various markets. Well, when they start pulling out of it, it's going to take some of the wind out of that. And you have to realize that, hey, don't fight the Fed is a real thing. If all of their actions bit up markets to where they are today, and we see that the acceptable level of valuation is where it is due to the fact that we have a very loose and a very accommodative Fed, well, that may change. So the reversing of some of that is going to take the air out, right? I mean, that makes nothing but sense. So I think that that's the big overriding issue, and I know we talk about the Fed a lot because it is a big issue right now. When we wrap this all around, what we've been talking about the last few weeks, I think it makes even more sense that when you think about where you are in the universe of fixed income and possibly alternatives and hedging, diversification along many lines and currency hedging and stuff, I think that all fits together. And it really just right now encapsulated everything we talked about and everything that we do for our clients. We did some rebalancing this week. We took some money off the table of the enhanced value for clients that were outside the boundaries of the levels that we have in our models because, well, it was made sense to scrape some of those profits. Worked out very well. So just something that you should be considering as well. Now, I want to get to our guest today. Lots of items. I have a lot of questions. A lot of questions because some of the things that Interactive Brokers are doing is pretty interesting. But first, I want to talk about our crowd. And I ask you this, and I'm going to ask you again. I mean, because a lot of people wish, and I bet you do, and wonder if you do, wish you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020. Well, our crowd investors were, and now you can join them in what's next. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our crowd investors have benefited from our crowd companies IPOing like Beyond Meat, or even being bought by companies like Intel and Nike, Oracle and Microsoft. And today you could join our crowd's investment in Zippin, innovating the $1 trillion retail industry with checkout-free technology, which is pretty cool. You see a lot of that happening. Already being deployed in the world's largest food service company, Zippin is ahead of the game as the retail world adopts the safety and efficiency of contactless payments. You can get in early on Zippin and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/TDI. If you're interested in investing, you need to join Our Crowd. The Our Crowd account is free. Just go to Our Crowd, OurCrowd.com/TDI. And our guest today is Steve Sanders, who is the Executive Vice President of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers Group. And his primary role is to market Interactive Brokers technology to the world. And he's been there for a long period of time. We're going to get to that in a second. He's been on the show last time, I think it was back in January. So first of all, let me thank you and Interactive Brokers, Steve, for being such a great supporter of the show and of the industry. So thank you so much and welcome aboard. How are you?
Thank you, Andrew. It's great to chat again. I think we're coming through COVID because we now have people back in the office here.
Oh, you do?
Which is very nice to see.
Yeah, so you get that kind of that new vibe, right, where you can actually maybe talk to people that are outside of just a meeting only. Right?
Absolutely.
That's good. That's
a
good.
Nice thing.
Yeah,
you know, we've done it 3 days a week and 2 days, you know, from home if people want. So I think it's pretty flexible.
Did you sense like a real sense of relief for people that were able to get out from their wayfared standing desks at home to now working in the office?
Well, I have to tell you, I came back, you know, 2 months after COVID because I just wanted to get out and get back into a routine.
Right.
I think people, when they come back at first, you know, it's just so easy to work from home and not have to have the commute. And you just get comfortable with what you're doing. And I don't think anybody, or at least most people who come back here, were looking forward to it. But I think once you come back and you see people and you get back into the routine, I think people are a little more into it. So
let me ask you something. Without naming names and just talking generalities, okay? Did a lot of people gain a lot of weight, do you think?
Well, I will tell you, there's three camps. There's the people that gain weight. There's the people that stayed the same. And there are some people that lost weight. You know, throughout this thing, you know, I maintained at least 2 months. I started 2 months into this swimming again.
Oh.
Laps every day. And, you know, you just have to get into that routine again.
Yep.
So. You know, depends on the person.
I hear you. Well, there's a lot of used Pelotons are going to be for sale soon, in my opinion, but that's another whole story. So
that's exactly right.
Last time you were on was January. And of course, back in January, we're talking about 6 months ago, but we're still in the heart of, I don't even think vaccines were really even making the rounds at that point. And there was a lot going on. And we covered a few things. And I want to just mention before we talk about some of the topics that I want to hit on, something really resonated with people that were listening. And the first thing was the stock yield enhancement program that you offer, because I think, you know, and frankly, whether it's IB or other firms, people don't know a lot about the stuff that is even available at their brokers, right? You know, and one of the things, for example, is the stock yield enhancement program, which, you know, we talk about because we advertise it for you, which is great. And I think it's awesome because a lot of people are like, wait, let me get this straight. I don't have to do anything, but I can get money, make money on my stocks that are sitting in my account. I'm like, yeah, right? Do you find people are pretty amazed by that too?
Yes, I do, but they do have to do something. They have to sign an agreement, so it isn't completely free money. But in my opinion, you know, you're not signing anything away by signing this agreement. We just have to do it because under Reg T, unless you have a margin balance, we're not allowed to lend out your stocks. So
right.
That we have to have the agreement signed.
But basically, you're going to split the deal. You're going to split any kind of yield that comes in
we're going to split any kind of revenue.
Right.
Just one thing to keep in mind. If you can't borrow the shares, there's no revenue.
Yeah.
So a lot of the general collateral, you know, there's no money to be made there because nobody needs to borrow it.
Right.
It mostly applies to stocks that are hard to borrow. But certainly if you have hard to borrow stocks, you know, it's worth it. You sign the agreement and money just shows up in your account.
Yeah, it's nothing big because I've had some people, like, oh, you know what? Hey, look, I got, you know, a dollar here, $3 there, $2 there,
right.
50 cents there, kind of. But it is, again, if you're holding on to the stock, it is a natural way that if it can be borrowed out, not that you're going to lose that stock because that's obviously
right.
In the hands of IB, but the concept of IB will be affecting the transaction of the lending of this and maybe some of those stocks that have a much higher interest rate on the borrow. I mean, listen, back in some of the days, I remember Beyond Meat was trading, it was like 95% or 120% borrow rate. Now that kind of thing could add up.
Yes, it can.
Right?
I just read in the Wall Street Journal that the Fed is considering, you know, inflation is rising faster than they said it would, and chances are rates are probably going up, although I don't have a crystal ball, but I would imagine, you know, all rates will go up with
yep.
that.
Yep. So the other thing was, of course, as you mentioned, the margin programs also was kind of interesting. I just wanted to kind of report back that what I received in terms of commentary over the last several months from our discussion and from, regarding IB, and particularly was the SYEP, or the stock yield enhancement margin. All right, so I want to talk about some interesting things because IB is, always making news because obviously you are, listen, I've been with you, I don't even know how many years we've been with you, 10, 12?
No, I have been here for over 20 years.
No, but I've been here. I've been with IB. I've been working with IB for my clients.
Absolutely.
For like 12. So you've been very progressive, but yet I find this is my take. Tell me if I'm wrong. IB's been very progressive, but yet careful. Is that a proper, do you think that's right?
Absolutely. I mean, we've discussed this before, but we started out in the options market making business. And in the options market making business, one can lose their shirt and their business if they're not careful about things. So, one of the most important things in the foundation of this broker, as well as the option market making, is to have good real-time risk management systems in place such that when there are sharp market moves, which of course don't happen every day, but when they happen, they can take you out of business. But when there are sharp market moves, we can respond to it in real time and make sure that, one client, doesn't blow through all their money and well past that. Mm-hmm. When that happens, if your broker isn't well capitalized, eventually the broker can go out of business.
Right. So let me ask you this, because you have good depth in the option area, and let's kind of roll back the clock and let's talk about the SoftBank move that was an incredible opportunity that they thought they had at buying calls on a variety of stocks, pushing stocks of what they had underlying anyway in their portfolio to a point that really started a massive short squeeze about a year ago on big names like the Apples and Googles and Amazon. Do you remember that, how they did that? They were able to really put a short squeeze on, which then was translated and refined this inefficiency of having options where you put out of the money calls on there to such a degree that the option traders, the sellers, are going to have to start hedging and buying the underlying stock is really what happened with a lot of these meme stocks, isn't it?
Yes, exactly right. Our founder, Thomas Petterfee, who's done a lot of trading, surely doesn't believe in going with all of this because eventually it's going to get you into trouble. I mean, what something is worth, something is worth something, and everything going on around it, jacking up the prices, isn't really going to change things in the long run. So people really need to beware.
Yeah, I mean, but is that something that's going to change? Because that is an inefficiency of the market. And one of the things that you have are peoples that look for these kinds of cracks. Because over the years, with indexing and with markets that are quickly, move very quickly and have information that is transferred and transparent, very, very available instantly for everybody, this is a kind of an inefficiency that how are we going to close this?
I think in all times, markets have always been efficient and reverted back to their mean. So certainly, this could go on for a little while with these types of stocks, but at some point it's going to come back to earth and certain people are going to take losses and then they're going to be blown right out of the markets.
And,
that will be that. I mean, it just can't go on forever.
I mean, would it be possibly if the Fed comes in with a margin, a change in their margin rate requirements, is that something that could be a catalyst to closing this down?
I don't know. And I don't know if the chances of that would be, you know, if the probability of that happening would be very high.
Yeah.
I mean, most accounts, I mean, we do have portfolio margin accounts, but most accounts are regulated under Reg T.
Right.
And the rules for margin on Reg T have, you know, been pretty stable for or the same for many, many years. I don't know when it's been changed. So I don't think it's you know, what the margin rules are. I think more of the problem is social media and people, you know, blowing these things up and, you know, people that don't have a lot of information, you know.
Or Steve, can I throw this out at you? The other side, which is a combination of what you said and the people that do know, are in the know, influencing on social media, coming in as possible retail shills. I'm not buying this all retail.
Right.
I'm not buying that all of this incredibly well-crafted shenanigans with GameStop or AMC is all necessarily retail driven by a guy sitting there on Robinhood looking at on his phone, somehow flipping back and forth to Reddit and to message boards and then hitting the trade button. I'm not buying it's all that.
Right. And I can't disagree with you. I just don't have any information that would tell me something either way. But
right.
Surely, you know, that could be happening. I will tell you, you know, and the few places I've looked, a lot of our clients, you know, when they do the opposite of what people are telling others on
right. So they're going possibly short, or they're buying puts.
Exactly, because their feeling right. is the same as I just stated, that the markets are eventually going to return to where they should be, and we tend to have more sophisticated investors that have been doing this for years and have been through the market cycles.
It's all a matter of timing, isn't it? All about. So let's talk about that. This whole idea of democratization of markets. This whole idea that, well, Wall Street, the suits, have been winning out for years. That's something that you, for decades, have been working on in a different manner. You didn't call it something. You're like, hey, we're going to bring investing to everybody, right? You know, and have one platform that can hit all sorts of, whether it's futures or equities or ETFs, mutual funds. This is something you've been working on for years. Is this democratization something of a kind of a red herring?
Well, democratization to a certain point. We've always been for democratizing the markets, but for people that were self-directed and wanted to educate themselves. And we provided the education and the tools for people to learn about this and to do the research in the markets. We have never been for people that want to come in and just, you know, buy stocks based on what they're hearing in Reddit or, you know, play with a very pretty video interface that's, you know, a lot of fun. We've always been, you know, after sophisticated investors and active traders around the world, but they have to do their homework and do the education and understand that markets go up and down.
Right. But I mean, when you say sophisticated, advanced, I mean, it's like any other platform though. So I know I use many platforms, and the first time you're on a platform, you're like, oh God, what's this? You know, I don't know what to click. It's all about education, isn't it?
It is about education, but I will tell you, and I've never used the Robinhood platform myself, but from what others tell me, you know, there isn't a lot of education there, you know, in order to trade, and there are nice graphics, and, you know, there's social media alongside it.
And big buttons, big buy buttons.
Yeah, big buy buttons. It seems like it's more of a game than a
right.
serious
right.
Than
a gamification
pursuit. And to me, you know, investing is a serious pursuit that you know, needs time and effort to be good at it.
Right. So you're also kind of going down the road in your continuation of the democratization of of this, or at least the availability and having access for several things. I don't remember the date you put it out, but there was a recent announcement that crypto was coming to the IB platform.
Yes. So
right now you do futures. Right now you do futures, right?
Yes, we do crypto futures. You know, we've always been about offering product around the world. We offer stock options, futures, forex, and bonds, and funds all around the world in many, many countries and market centers. Mm-hmm. And so we're always looking for new product. We introduced gold earlier in the year, so our clients can now come and buy gold on our platform.
And hold on, let me back up. When you say gold, you're not talking about futures. You're talking about.
Oh, we've had gold futures for years. This is cash gold.
Cash gold. How does that work?
You just come in and either the future can deliver the gold, which we didn't allow before, and it will sit in your account, or you can actually buy and transfer the gold.
So do you have a holding place for the gold?
Yes, there are, I forgot the details of this and I'm not the expert, but I believe it's the same place that the CME uses.
So the point is, though, you have physical asset. That's your point.
Yes, you're allowed to get the physical asset.
Here. And can you buy in partials?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm, that's interesting. Okay, anyway, so back to crypto, sorry. Back to crypto. So,
the next product is crypto, and we expect to launch that into the U.S. to begin with, and that's phase one. Phase one, and that would be for individuals and joint accounts. The second phase will be for advisors, which we hope to follow up pretty quickly with, and then other places around the world.
So do you have a long list or short list of coins that will be available? Is it going to be just like the top five?
Well, unfortunately, we generally don't pre-announce things, so we're not talking about the details just yet. So the only thing we've really, talked about that there will be some Bitcoin to start with in August, but more details to come later.
So the question that I have, the important question though, is I'm buying the cash contract, of course, or cash, the real thing, right? Versus the future versus the ETF. What's that?
Versus the future.
Yeah, versus the future or an ETF. So now, are you telling me that, let's just call it Bitcoin for the discussion here, are you telling me that in someone's account, they can buy Apple, they can buy a gold ETF, they can buy a mutual fund, they can buy a smattering of futures, and also now cash, Bitcoin / coins, all in the same account?
Yes, I am telling you that. Wow. From the customer's point of view, they'll log in and they'll see all these asset classes. In terms of the underlying, it will be structured slightly differently because you need to have a dedicated separate account for Bitcoin. But, from the customer's point of view, when they log in and they're looking at everything they hold, there'll be another account. But this is no different than what we do with futures. If you're trading stocks and futures, even though you think of it as one account, there's a separate commodity account and a separate
security. But to be honest with you, at the end user, we don't care.
Yeah.
At the end user, we don't care. You can go through all the different reasons. You know what I'm saying, Steve? At the end user, I don't care. I just push the button and just go somewhere else.
That's exactly right.
Right. So what about transfers? So one of the big things about coin / brokerage / banks. Banks, you could do Zelle, you could do all sorts of things, and you could do the, there's also all of the, other apps, alt apps we'll call it, that maybe Square or PayPal or, pick your poison that you can, just send things out. Now, in brokerage, it's a little bit more difficult. You could do ACATS, you could do ACH in, out. Yeah. You can't say, I can't call up, hi, Interactive Brokers. Can you please send my Apple shares, 2 shares to my buddy Joe to pay for him for the pool he just, you can't do that. So, but Bitcoin also has wallets. Are you going to have wallets?
Yes, Yes, it may not be available day one, but we will be building the ability to transfer to a wallet.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So that's a big thing because a lot of people are talking about, and especially in the area of advisors, you know, what and how, if we want to get involved, can we? And it's been pretty limited, you know, if we wanted to, you know, so that's kind of an interesting thing.
We're going to, just to let you know, as soon as we, you know, introduce this for advisors, and we hope to do that pretty quickly, we think it's going to be very, very big for advisors. I mean, I'm sure you as an advisor and others every now and then get a client who says, I'd like Bitcoin. And if you're not on a platform right now where you can get it, you know, you probably have to tell the client, sorry, I can't do it. So we're trying to make that easy for advisors.
As an advisor, I'm going to have to figure out what the compliance requirements are too, as there is no real regulatory oversight for coins right now, right? I mean, it's not SEC or FINRA
it's state regulated. Yeah. Although there's talk about doing something more national.
There needs to be something because it's not so much that I don't think this side of the regulations, this side of the concern that I have, is not so much like, oh, let's regulate it for taxation and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about kind of the umbrella of, okay, what are the limitations? You know, you start doing that and all of a sudden it goes south on you and a client says, hey, you know, yes, I did ask him for this Bitcoin and all that, but still, and the regulator's like, wait a minute, you're outside the compliance range here. You know, and that just is a problem to begin with.
Right, right. It is very gray. Right. I will tell you that the IRS was well ahead of all of this, and they certainly have their rules for how they collect their money on Bitcoin.
Yep. But, well, this would be actually
other
easier
than
because
the IRS.
This will be easier because you'll have a consolidated 1099 possibly. Let me kind of go. Right. I want to talk about the platforms for a second. And there's a lot of new things and improvements to the platforms that are in the works and all that, but one of the things that I really want to ask you about is I think an item that's on a lot of people's minds, but we don't know how to deal with it. And that is the idea of security and concern about hacks and the concern about people, you know, maybe somebody coming in through a Trojan horse or maybe even some fishing expedition, something, and getting into my account. Now, I'll tell you one thing. I've never shared this with you, but I'm going to share this with you, okay?
Yeah.
So I work with multiple brokerage firms, right, for our clients. You know that. And we have specific strategies in each, in different ones. And people say to me, you know, which one we go to, I say, hey, we're going to interact with brokers. One of the things I want you to let you know is the process to get going is really tougher than most others. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you have to prove a lot of stuff to them, right? You got to send them information. But I got to tell you something. If you think about that, what it really is a massive security improvement over others. So I call up some brokers. I'm like, hey, it's Andrew. Do me a favor. I need you to send out 5,000 to this client, blah, blah, blah. I said that to interactive brokers. They'd be like, no. Who are you? Let me go through this whole check of who you are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you guys take security to a much different level than some others. You're very serious about it. What are you concerned? What are you doing now to address some of these items related to what we've seen in this hacking environment?
Right. So yes, we've always taken security very seriously. I remember when we introduced those physical tokens.
Oh, the little cards?
Little cards
with all the letters on them.
Yeah, exactly. You punch in numbers. And I remember, you know, sitting on the marketing side, listening to the complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And we went ahead and did this anyway, in spite of all the complaints. You know, why do you make this more complicated? You know, my other broker never did this, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, and we've had that for many years, that type of second factor authentication. So I would say in the last probably 3 years, we introduced what's called the IBK. So you don't have to have a separate physical device. It sits on your phone. It's real easy to use. If your phone has, you know, photo recognition, you just point it at your face and you're logged into our application. And
right.
If it's fingerprinted, you do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, at first we made it very, very complicated, but over the years we've simplified it so that if you have a phone, you know, it should be, you know, second nature and easy. And just having that extra layer of security, I would think would let a lot of people sleep at night.
First was the cards that you had to do a response key that was like a two-part response key.
Yes.
Well, you had to get, you know, three letters match that, or three numbers match that three numbers.
Yeah, we called them the bingo cards.
Yeah, the bingo cards. The second one was an abbreviated version of the same thing. It was kind of more of an electronic bingo card.
Exactly.
And then there was one other, I think, if I'm not mistaken, until you got to the IB key. But this
there was the physical device.
Right.
Depended on how much money you had in your account. but we've simplified it, you know.
But now it's normal. Now it's a normalized, you know, second party, two-factor authentication that – any, you know, other people use, but its point is, you know, whether you're looking at my face, whether you're doing my retina scan, I don't care what it is, look at a fingerprint. Point is that you guys take security very seriously, and I appreciate that. You know, I think that's important. All the brokers do, obviously.
Well,
but
thank you. Not everybody appreciates it in the same way.
Right.
And as I said, when we started rolling it out, we surely got complaints, but it's the right thing to do. And I don't see a lot of other brokers doing it.
It's optional, but you know, a lot of times you talk about, you know, the security, the compliance, and we call that the profit protection, prevention department.
Right.
But people have to understand that right now it's a little bit more important to have, especially start getting into wallets and all that, you know, to have a very significant firewall up in there. Last thing I want to talk about is, any kind of other initiatives you may have. We talked about Portfolio Analyst, which is a great tool for people to use, portfolioanalyst.com. They can go to and just kind of get a full review of their portfolio pretty much on the fly. What other things, maybe little nooks and crannies, do you see in the industry or something coming forward that may be interesting in the next period of time?
Well, the big things for us this year, you know, have been gold and of course, Bitcoin.
Right.
Both very, very important. You know about our debit card, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So our debit card is being introduced in Canada next week, which we're very, very excited about. I think that will be a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Other things, the Portfolio Analyst, we did a complete revamp on that. So, you know, the whole front end for it was redone, which I think is a big thing.
Yep.
Let's see, I'm just looking. We're actually coming out with a communique next week. Our communiques, we come out with every so often, and it has the big announcements. Let me just see if I can find it here.
Okay, a little bit of advanced information here. I like this.
Yeah, I'll give you advanced.
Breaking news.
if I can find it here. Never find it when you need it.
Never.
Here we are. Okay. So let's see. I mentioned gold. CME Micro Bitcoin Futures, right? So we started out with the big Bitcoin
mm-hmm.
contract. We
right.
now have the micros, which are 1/10 the size.
So the margin requirements are less on that, easier to get into for people that don't want to put up all that money per trade.
Exactly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. ETF, no transaction fee program. So we're partnering with a number of fund families, ETF fund families, to offer their ETFs commission free. Our mutual fund marketplace has grown to over 40,000 funds from 400 fund families. I believe we have the largest in the world.
Yeah, a lot of funds out there. Too many funds.
Yes.
Too many choices. That's good stuff. That's a lot of.
Oh, the other thing that I would like to talk about is our IBKR campus. Okay. Our IBKR campus is our, as we spoke before, it's really important to educate our clients. We're looking for self-directed clients that want to invest the time into learning. So it's based on five pillars. Our Traders Academy, where you can take courses and lessons and tests and quizzes and learn about what you need to learn about. Our industry webinars are number two. Our Traders Insight, which, you know, goes out and it's market commentary from us as well as our partners. Our Student Trading Lab is number four, which is a program that any professor anywhere in the world, and we have close to 200 of them, can use our paper trading platform as a teaching tool in their classroom. And the last one is our IBKR Quant, which is a sister newsletter to the Traders Insight that is for programmers, because we have a lot of API programmers.
Right.
So that is our IBKR campus, and it's reachable from our website under education.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I appreciate Steve Sanders, EVP of Marketing, Product Development, and Interactive Brokers. Hey, as always, thank you for joining us and spreading out the good information, all that, and we'll see you again soon.
We will see you again soon. Right, thank Steve. You so much. I really appreciate it, as always.
All right, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thanks for joining me. Make sure to go over to thedisciplineinvestor.com, put a like on the Apple podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts, or whatever directory or repository app. Make sure to put some commentary on that. If you want to leave me a message, if you want to find out more about what we do, all that's over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So check that out. Until next week, I bid you adieu. Happy Father's Day to everyone that is celebrating. Give your father a big kiss and make sure you tell him you love him. I'll see you next week. Thanks so much. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.